We're live. Welcome to Dragon, their history and their myths and debunking myths from reality. So why should I do a podcast about dragons, right? Some of you may think you do spiritual thing on your channel, so why are you talking about dragons? Because dragons, as we'll see today, played a very important role in the settling of this planet and helping humans and being able to grow on this planet and evolve. The dragons originally were habitants from the stars, and their system is called Draco, which is the, I believe, Greek for dragons. It's a constellation from the far northern sky, and the it was one of the 48 constellations listed by the 2nd century astronomer Ptolemy. And it remains one of the 88 modern constellations today. Now, they came to Earth in order to help humanity and Earth, a conscious being, right? Earth is a conscious being whose body is the planet. They were present as physical beings and eventually entered a different sphere of existence as they were hunted down. So I want to present their history and their wisdom because there are great teachers. There are great elders. And so, especially having been to Whistler and the cultural center here and seeing how they respect the elders and why they are continuing their traditions to honor the elders, I think it's important that we also honor the elders of the dragons coming to teach us in this world. What's interesting, right? I always tell you guys about, and girls, about not looking for what separates us, but what's uniting us, right? And that most likely it's true if every culture around the globe share the same stories, right? So we studied the creation myth, the flood myth, and now we're going to talk about dragons, because dragons were virtually in all cultures around the globe. And the earliest attesting reports of dragon creatures would be that they say they were giant snakes, right? But we'll look into that today and understand that they weren't giant snakes, they were dragons. So dragons are first described in the mythology in the ancient Near East and appear in ancient Mesopotamian art. Oh my God. I've picked long words today, but the word used to describe them is similar to a snake, but not quite. So this is what happens when you're translating something. Sometimes you can translate a word, but you can't translate an expression, right? So you're saying, okay, well, word for word, this is what it translates to, but the English expression to mean the same thing would be something else. When people are finding or interpreting, because some of these languages are dead, so they're giving them a meaning, they're getting a sense of the word, but they're saying, well, it's like a giant snake. Okay, so it's saying it's reptilian, it's huge, but it's not a snake, right? So because some of them are described as having legs, never seen a snake with legs, some have wings, never seen a snake with wings, and other attributes that snakes just simply don't possess, right? So, and that's one of the first thing that you should know when you're reading about history and they're talking about, they're translating that way, you have to also look. It's like a giant snake, but with legs and wings. Okay, well, it's a dragon, right? We can agree on that. At least, I hope you agree with me on that because we're just getting started. Now, the other people say, well, they're like me, right? For that many cultures around the globe to talk about these big reptiles or whatever, they're saying, well, maybe they weren't dragons. Maybe what they're describing is a dinosaur. So we'll look into that. Adrian Mayer argues that some stories of dragons may have been inspired by ancient discoveries of fossils belonging to dinosaurs or other prehistoric animals. She argues that dragons' lore in northern India may have been inspired by observation of oversized, extraordinarily big bones of fossilized beds at the foothills of the Himalayas. And an ancient Greek artistic depiction of the monster of Troy may have been influenced by some fossils, but this one is a little far-fetched, an extinct species of giraffe, whose fossils are commonly found in the Mediterranean region. My God. So, in China, it's a region also rich with fossils of large prehistoric animals. It's very common. So, these remains are frequently identified as dragon bones and traditionally used or commonly used in traditional medicine. Mayer, however, is careful to point out, and this is always, you know, the exception to the rule that I like to point out, is that not all stories of dragons and giants are inspired by fossils, and notes that in Scandinavia, as many stories of dragons and sea monsters, but has been considered barren of large fossils. And my question to you is, and I'm inviting you, hello, Diane, I'm inviting you to share your opinions or your question on the podcast. If they could be inspired by dinosaur bones, why couldn't some of those dinosaur bones actually be dragons? And you're going to say, well, no. All these bones have been classified, identified. They have proper dinosaur names. So no, you know, it's dinosaurs. Yes, I understand they've been classified as dinosaurs, but maybe, perhaps, some of those, because we don't see them with their skin on and their muscles on and their, you know, all we get is the bones. So perhaps we gave them a dinosaur bone, but they could have been dragons, right? It's like there's crocodiles, there's caiman, there's the Komodo dragons. We can see resemblance. They're part of the same family. But what did we know about how they look on the outside? We don't, right? Now, someone is saying, yes, but they didn't find dinosaurs with wings. But they found dinosaurs with feathers. It's just that the quality of the fossils we're getting, which are very, very old, don't always fossilize perfectly, right? So I don't think it's that much of a jump to say that it's possible. But let's move on. I'm getting myself ahead here. This is very passionate for me because dragons are part of my personal life. And so this is why I absolutely want to share with you guys this experience that I've had and maybe inspire some of you to start working with dragons, right? So the fact is that we'll talk about the Library of Alexandria. In the Great Library of Alexandria, which was situated in Alexandria in Egypt, was one of the largest and most significant libraries of the ancient world. Now, it wasn't the only one, but this one had a lot of money. And so it was part of a larger research institution called the Muswin. And it's unknown how many scrolls were housed at any given time, because it's like a library. You can take a book out, you can bring a book back in. But it's estimated that it was between 40,000 to 400,000 when it was at its site. So the library declined over several centuries. The reason why I'm bringing the Library of Alexandria is that in those scrolls that were pigeoned there, there were information about things they were considered myth, like Atlantis and Lemuria. And those scrolls were not necessarily spread all over, right? So if you had information about Atlantis, it's because Atlantis was technically close to Egypt. And some survivors of Atlantis emigrated to Egypt. And they might have written those scrolls. And not necessarily have the books, those scrolls, copied and distributed around the world, right? So there's information that was there that wasn't there before. And sometimes, because it's so old and the source has dissipated or there's very little corroborating evidence, people say, okay, but that wasn't real. That was a story. So it becomes myth over, you know, legend or facts. And so there were scrolls on dragons in Egypt. In Egyptian mythology, Apep or Apophis is a giant serpentine creature. Okay, so serpentine, so meaning not a snake, otherwise they would call it a snake. And this is where in the translation it kind of you're wondering, okay, so if it's serpentine-like creature, meaning that it could have wings, it could have legs, it could, have different other features. And he resides in the Egyptian underworld. Now, this is very important because we'll understand the purpose of dragons we're serving. The underworld in Egypt mythology is where the wise were, right? This is where you needed very pious judges that would judge your life and decide to send you in the afterlife, whether you'd go to hell or to heaven. And the guardian of this place was a dragon, meaning the guardian of wisdom, right? So another giant serpent, another name for it was Nehebaku. It was so massive in some of the stories that the entire earth rested on him. Now, again, sometimes we speak and we figure these stories and we take these stories word for word. However, the idea of storytelling and oral tradition is sometimes is the hidden meaning in the parable, right? So it's not a direct story, but it's more parable. Hi, Haley. Hi, Janine. The world rested on a giant dragon, meaning that the role that this giant dragon was playing was massive in supporting the earth and its growth. Okay, I hope you're following me. And if you're not, just ask me a question. But in the pyramid text, it speaks of a giant serpent called Denwin. And his body was made of fire and was able to destroy things. And ultimately, he was defeated by Pharaoh. And that victory of defeating the dragon allowed Pharaoh his divine right to rule. And you will see that one of the jobs that dragons were fulfilling, it was when it's the same as in England, the queen is supposed to be holding the power of God, right? She's supposed to have some divine right to be where she is on the throne. Or excuse me, now we have a king, his divine right to be on the throne. But it was the same thing with Pharaoh. Pharaoh and his family were considered very special. One of the reasons why they were so special is because they were educated in spiritual and universe's laws. And the person who would say to Pharaoh, "Yes, you're wise enough and we'll give you more knowledge," was a dragon. And so defeating the dragon is doesn't mean that you're stabbing the dragon and cutting him to pieces. That's not it at all. It only means that you when you were tested by the dragon, you were able to win the contest of wisdom and be granted more rights, in this case, the divine right to rule. The other symbol, which is well known in the Egyptology, is the serpent eating its own tail. He's called the Ouroboros. Now, the precursor, and this is where it gets weird because now dragons have five heads or seven heads. And again, they didn't physically have seven heads. But they had seven major testings that you had to go through, and those were the seven heads of the dragon. So you have to take away from the picture you're making in your mind, and it was more to be reminded. It's just like the song at Christmas, right? The 12 days of Christmas. People sing the seven lords are leaping and this and this and that. But the song was actually created in Protestant England, and it was to teach the children to remember Catholics' things. And so this was helping them memorize things through the song. So it sounded innocent enough. And this is the same way. You're going to face the dragons with a seven head, meaning that you'll be tested seven times. Not that it actually had seven heads. That doesn't exist. Only in horror movies and fantasy stories. There's also a famous image of a dragon eating its tail in the Codex of Marcianus, and it was copied in numerous works of alchemy. Now, again, this is very, very, very important. The dragon is associated with alchemy. And what is alchemy? Alchemy is the transformation of matter. Now, the biggest one is you take lead, transform it to gold. And people are physically trying to do that. But it's also more in the parable sense, you're taking like a diamond in a rough and you're polishing it and you're making it shine. That's the idea. There's a process of transformation, a process of going from human to a divine being. And not just Pharaoh, the divine right to rule, but every one of us is divine. And this transformation is what's in the alchemy books, and that's what they were trying to teach. And remember, people were persecuted over thousands of years for their beliefs that didn't fit in with the mold of whoever was ruling at the time. And the whole idea behind dragon teaching is that you're a divine being and you have the power to transform your life and change and heal yourself. You don't need anyone, you don't need to pay anyone to salvage you, you don't need anyone's external influences to do this work. But that takes the power away from everybody else. It gives you the power. You're the strong one, right? And so that's what the meaning of this dragon eating its tail means. It means to turn over yourself and look inside and find out who you are and rediscover this divine part of you and having access to your divine powers. So then we talk about and the fact that in Egypt, the dragons were associated with fire. However, Eastern dragons are mostly water dragons. So dragons in the Eastern cultures are usually depicted as wingless. So this is interesting, right? Because for some reason, we think that every single dragon had to have wings. Not the case. And so this is where it gets closer to the possibility of these dinosaur bones being found without wings. It could be possibly that some of them were actual dragons, right? They're four-legged, so they're not snakes. They have four legs, but they are serpentine creature with above average intelligence. And what would that serpentine mean? It means that they had a very fluid body, right? They weren't as stiff as a bull or a horse. There's no serpentine there. But when you see the dragons are very long, long neck, long tail. And this is where perhaps where this weird giraffe could have fit in with a dragon because it had a long neck. Although I'm not sure, I haven't seen the skeleton of this precursor of the giraffe to see if it had a long tail. But that's the idea of the serpentine creature. A serpent, very long, very, flowy, with legs. Now, the commonality of traits are often a hybridization, so a mix of feline, reptilian, mammal, and bird. So that you could have all of these features. So feline, in the way they can walk and they can stalk and they're, in the way they're very quiet, the way they move. Reptilian, because they were described, some of them to have scales, some of them have feathers. Mammal, and then the mammal meaning, it would give birth to an actual dragon and not necessarily an egg. And avian as the wings, right? And feathery features. Now, scholars believe that maybe it's the precursor of a crocodile, and because it bears the closest resemblance. Right, so we're trying to match something to something we know to make it easier to match, right? For our brain to start understanding. And I mean, a horse, when it first started developing, was about the size of a dog. And then it eventually, over hundreds and thousands of years, average developed into the horse that we know today. And some of those horses are massive, where the Arabian horse is more built for speed, right? So there's different traits that would develop over thousands of years as things evolve in, survival of the fittest and all these things come into play. But that's not quite what happened to the dragons. We'll get that to that later. But they're trying to explain it that way, right? So now, that's mostly because the dragons were encountered in forested and swampy areas. But again, that's a water dragon, so it's kind of normal to see them there. Hi, Marilyn. Hi, Juan. Pleasure to meet you again. So they would, that's the Oriental dragon imagery. But it's the dragons that were in certain areas will vary, right? Just like the horses, Cloverdale horse is very different than an Arabian horse. So depending on the fauna and where they were growing and evolving, these dragons are also shifted. I mean, we don't have to look very far. The Galapagos Islands have originally one race of reptilian. What are they called? But it doesn't matter. Anyway, they got separated on different islands, and because they're eating different things and have a little slightly different habitat from one island to the other, they developed, and also interbreeding, right? It's no longer the survival of the fittest, it's whoever's on your little island, so you're produced with them. So this inbreeding of that species on that island started developing certain traits that others don't. And this is where Darwin got his theory of evolution. So it's the same idea with dragons. Not all dragons were created equal, and so that's why we don't need to argue, but dragons are this or dragons are that. They can have wings or they don't. Some have beards, some don't. Some like water, some like earth. They're different types of dragons. In Mesopotamia, the ancient people believed the creatures to be very similar to dinosaurs, right? And again, we're saying similar. And they referred to the dragons as benevolent and malevolent. What does that mean? That some of the dragons were good, they were kind, they were wise, and some of them were destructive and angry and things like that. And I don't know about you, but being human, there's a time in my life where I was angry, and there's another time where I'm kind, there's another time, I'm pissed off. Depends what you're doing, what you're saying, and what's happening, right? So it doesn't have to be different dragons. It's not like a category of them were all good and a category of them were all angry. Since they were hunted, they got angry, right? And then they got destructive. But for me, I find it hard to separate them in those two categories. I think it's just depending on the circumstances, they were who they were. Sumerian poetry often compared a gigantic serpentine monster, a dragon creature with the part of a lion in the front, but the back legs and the tail were parts of a bird. So this is where all of a sudden dragons become a mix of different animals. Their hind legs would have claws. I wouldn't say they'd be exactly like a bird, but they definitely had claws. And I'm pretty sure if you got close enough to them, did you survive the encounter? So a slightly different lion dragon with two horns and the tail of a scorpion appears in the Neo-Assyrian period. So these creatures are depicted and described, and then it becomes painted, and it becomes everybody wants to reproduce that, and everybody puts their little touch. But the dragon creature with horns, body and neck of a snake, so long, elongated, fluid, but with the four legs of a lion and the hind legs of a bird also appears in the Akkadian period. So its belief in this creature is portrayed and carried very, very long time. So there is something that is supporting this belief as to why these people are carrying the beliefs of those beings, right? And just like the Egyptians, he works with the underworld in Mesopotamia. So something has to do with the entrance of a cave or living in a dark place, right? And in the theory, when you get a bunch of scientists in one room, some of them disagree, some of them don't. They fight certain ideas, and their interpretation of the story gets mixed up. So this is where you need, when you do your research on things like this, you need to look at more than one source material, right? You need to expand your research into trying, okay, so these people, that's what they're saying. Is that what everybody else is saying? And it's not the case, right? Some of them are saying, no, he wasn't evil, he was good because of this, because of that. So my theory is that they were both have the ability to be good and bad. And it was a matter of choices and reaction to their environment and what was happening at the time. In China, the word dragon has come to be applied to a legendary creature named Lung. Now, Lung is associated with good fortune, and many East Asian deities and demigods have dragons as their personal mounts or companion. So this is again very important. There's been propaganda in the Middle Ages against dragons, right? Which is what destroyed or the dragon's, I would say, reputation. And in China, they weren't affected by this propaganda. So the dragons there are representative of good fortune. They are associated with the divine. And they'll let people ride on their backs, but they will be companion of the wise. And that's what true dragons were about. The dragons were identified, were also identified with the Emperor of China. And again, this divine power to rule. And we're talking the first emperor of China, right? Whatever happened after that, and when they went to war, and then this and that, they were maybe emperors, but they didn't have the divine seal to rule. And so the Chinese dragon is the highest ranking creature in the Chinese animal hierarchy. Now, why is this important? Well, because the 11 other animal in the zodiac of the Chinese are animals that you can still see to this day. So I find it strange. And because this stuff is old, right? Chinese goes way, 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 way back. I find it interesting that out of the 12 creatures, and they could have put anything there, they decide to put a mythological creature. Some of you are going to say, well, did you run out of animals? No, they could have put a fish in there. Wait, there are fishes. Are they fishes? Anyway, they're fishes. There's other things they could have put, but they decided to put the dragon. And the dragon is at the top of the hierarchy. So that would be because they recognize the dragon's wisdom and knowledge and abilities. And they wanted to include it. And they didn't see it at the time as a mythological creature, just as a very, very rare creature. There's a difference, right? So the dragon represents good luck, strength, health. And is a male element of yang, which again led people to think that all dragons are male dragons. Not the case. In some of the movies, including dragons, they're saying all the females are extinct, they're gone. They just shifted dimension, but they're still there. Now, the stories or the mythology of China includes stories about a man who loved dragons and could understand a dragon's will, and he was able to tame them and raise them as well. The idea would be that dragons were very wise. They weren't wild, but they weren't easily approached. You needed to be an adept or an apprentice and learn the basic of spirituality before you could approach a dragon. So taming the dragon meant that this man was extremely wise and he was able to work with them because he was recognized as a sage. In another story of Kong Ye, the 14th emperor of the Xia dynasty, was given a male and female dragon as a reward for his obedience to the gods of heaven. meaning they weren't given as pets. The dragons came to him, recognized him, his wisdom, and assisted him in ruling. You see the difference? So the literature records that Yingluang can be traced back in the document from the pre-queen, Qin period. So this is like a long, long time ago. In most other culture, that would be the mythology, right? So this mythology is from 2,200 years ago. The Greek mythology goes back, you know, we started counting from zero as being the birth of Christ, and that's the yearly calendars that we're using. So technically, it was 2,023 years ago that Jesus was born. But this is 2,200 years before that. So we're going back 4,000 years. The main characteristic of the later dragon was that they could control the sky. What is involved in controlling the sky? It's the clouds, right? The clouds can bring rain. They can cover the sun. If a lot of thunder clouds get together, you get thunder. You get storms. And so, but those are water dragons. So water dragons, yeah, I could see they control the skies because they control the water. And what's in the sky except clouds? If there's no clouds, it's a sunny day. But, you know, they didn't control the stars. It was just a matter of playing with the rain. Cycle of water is it's water. It evaporates with the sun. It condenses in the atmosphere, comes back down as water, right? So it's all water. So China was surrounded by water dragons, mostly. Now, in Korea, which is not far off of China, there they had land and water dragons. In a Korean dragon, in many ways, is similar to the Chinese and Japanese dragons. However, they had a long beard. Why isn't it possible? You know what I mean? I can see in dogs when they get older, their hair turns white. Just like normal humans' hair will go white or the beard will go white. So, and this is where we're thinking, but it's a lizard, so it can't have a beard. And we need to walk away from our preconceived ideas that dragons were necessarily made of scales. Some of them could have beards. It's also where... It's the Korean dragon that's holding the sphere or the crystal in their hand. This mythical form is the Sintamani, and it's either in his claws or in his mouth. So when you're seeing all these statues of dragons with, you know, the sphere in their hands or in their mouth, that's a Korean dragon. If you were able to yield the orb, hold it, and do things with the orb, you were blessed with the ability of omnipotence and creation at will. And it's interesting because in the history that we'll see later on, the true history of dragons, the dragons, when they met an adept or a properly trained disciple, they were given a crystal. And with this crystal, it would enhance your ability and your properties, and you could do more, and you would be able to manifest things. Now, I know of people in this life right here, right now, that can manifest things just by saying them. So it's not impossible. And for those of you who work with crystals and do crystal grids, it's the same idea. Utilizing the energy that is there, putting it on a grid to augment its power, and then directing it at a situation or a person or yourself to heal something that is not going right with you. And so this particular crystals was all about spiritual connection and enhancing your ability to see across the veil and bring back information and all those things. So if you could yield that, it said that the only way to have one, if it's the dragon dropped it. And there were born a lot of stories about tricking dragons about talking. And then they would drop it out of their mouth. But the truth is the dragons would give you the crystal if you prove to be worthy of having the crystal. Because you have to understand that you can't, if you're a power hungry person and you're given this, the dragons didn't want you to have the power to fight and create chaos, right? But if you were kind and generous and helpful, then the dragon wanted to encourage that ability, help you develop this strength. So, in the Korean myths, the kings are originally granted divine power as by the dragons. And that is why they will wear the dragon on their chest, on both their arms, and on their back. It's also, there's a story that one of the ancestors married the daughter of a dragon, the king of the West Sea. So they're closely associating themselves with the dragons as being powerful being, wise being, teaching beings. The Korean folk mythology states that most dragons were lesser dragons. And this is something that the nine-tailed fox or all the other beings existing in current mythology says that it takes 1,000 years of cultivation, which looks a lot like the idea of China. You need to cultivate, you need to learn things, right? So you need to be kind, you need to be generous, you need to be forgiving, you need to demonstrate compassion. And dragons were given 1,000 years to achieve this. And then you would become a full-fledged dragon and have one more toe. And this is the number of toes on a dragon in Korea lets you know what kind of dragon it is. But they were described as python-like creatures that lived in water or caves. And again, good luck was associated with them and good things would come to you if you'd meet a dragon. In South America, and I say South America wildly, right? It's wind dragon. So now we saw the fire dragon, we saw the water and the land dragon, and now it's the wind dragon. The wind dragon, and I'm sorry for massacring this, is Quetzalcoatl. Quetzalcoatl is it's a god, right? So the dragon was a god, and he could change shape. He had the ability to, he was big enough to carry two men on his back, and look like a plumed serpent. So a serpent with wings, and instead of scales, it was feathers. And he's often represented as a man with a beard, as a wise elder. So did the dragon have the ability to change shape? Or could they see that you could communicate with this dragon as an elder and were able to pass on knowledge? Now, some of you may have seen Pocahontas. Pocahontas goes to the tree and talks to her grandmother in the tree, right? This would be, it's still a tree, but she's talking to the being inside the tree. This might be the bit of the same idea. It represented that this was a wise old creature. And that's why they said it would take the shape of a man with a white beard. And the wind god was shown with this ability to kind of have flutes, natural flutes, and he could blow into those. And so here they are playing musical. The aspect of music is a matter of connection and healing and vibratory sense. But that comes from the wind dragon. You won't see that in the other types of dragon. Now, in the Western culture, it's not something you find in America, right? There's no dragons here in the northern part of America. There's the Thunderbird, there's other animals, but dragon isn't part of the lore. However, Western culture, as in Europe, they had, since the High Middle Ages, depicted winged, horned, and capable of breathing fire. But in Egypt, they were capable of breathing fire. Interestingly enough, this extends from Mesopotamia. So, could be the same lineage of dragons. But in Greece, they were definitely fire dragon. And they usually The word they were using for dragon can be translated to snake, but it referred to a kind of giant snake that either possesses supernatural characteristic or otherwise controlled by supernatural power, right? So it wasn't just, it's a snake. The word they're using describe the whole paragraph, right? The Greek god Zeus battled the monster Typhon, which apparently had 100 serpent heads and it breathed fire. They also had the water snake in Greece, Hydra, and there's another snake that was guarding the Golden Fleece. Now, the Golden Fleece is something that belonged to the god. And Jason, the hero of the story, wants the Golden Fleece and goes, battles the dragon who's guarding the fleece. And he slays the dragon and he makes off with the fleece. But in the story, it says that Athena, the goddess of wisdom, stands there watching. The Golden Fleece may not have been an actual Golden Fleece. It could have been knowledge. And again, by defeating the dragon, didn't mean to slay or kill the dragon, but pass the test of the guardian. Because I can assure you that you couldn't just kill it. Imagine having a T-Rex in front of you, and you're the only one there, and you're going to kill this T-Rex? It makes no sense, right? You didn't kill a dinosaur with just one man. So given the size of dragons, surpass the breadth and length of a 50-oared ship, that's a pretty big animal. And so it's defeating or proving, answering all the questions the dragon asked you and succeeding in proving that you're holding the knowledge and therefore were given the wisdoms of the gods. And that's why Athena stands watch and doesn't interfere. She doesn't need to because the dragons and her are working together. Okay. Now, the Norse gods, the motive of a hero trying to sneak past a long sleeping dragon, again, to steal some sort of treasure. It's in many old Norse sagas. On the advice of Odin, Sigurd drains Fafnir of his blood, which Fafnir is a dragon, and drinks it, and he gets the ability to understand the language of birds. Now, if you're curious about Odin, I did a podcast on him, the Norse Mythology Mystery School. Odin is a very wise man that is almost like a Jesus figure, right? And so one of the things that you could learn from the dragon was, in this case, it's the language of the birds, but you could speak to any kind of animals. And this is something that's seem to have been lost. And now there's a resurgence of people saying, I can speak to animal, and they can prove it. And so it's not completely lost. It's still there. It's just not something we learn at school. That's all. And now, when does history become myth, right? Flavius Philostratus discussed dragons in India in 217 after Jesus. And the mentions that in most respect, the tusks resembled a large swine and is slightly billed and twisted. And at some point, it has an unabraded as shark's teeth. This is a pretty specific description of an animal that nobody's seen. But this is sometimes research that was done in other libraries, ancient scrolls, and they're bringing this and they're saying this creature looked like this. So now we're getting, there was tusk. So some dragons in some of the imagery, you will see tusk, right? And that could be the two flutes I was talking about, right? Because when you can't get close to the creature, we observe it from a distance. Like we saw a bear yesterday, it was 500 feet from us, which was a safe distance. You can see it's fur is black, but you know, the details of the bear were missed, right? So I would do my best to describe it as best as I could from what I could see from the distance it was at, but without having the ability to zoom in and get a big close-up of the bear, I can't give you the details of it more than that. But this is very detailed. According to a collection of books of Claudius Aelianus on animals in Ethiopia, there was a species of dragon that hunted elephants and that could grow up to 55 meters, that's 180 feet, with a lifespan that, you know, would surpass all the animals that they could observe. So they're saying they observed this animal in the 4th century. So, and I mean, we're not talking thousands and thousands of years ago here, but in the 4th century, Basil of Caesarea addressed young men, and he mentions that the dragons are guarding treasures and riches. And in Greece, they have a Greek mystery school. So we'll see what the dragon was guarding in a minute. I just want to finish demonstrating that they were just everywhere. Yeah. In Europe, the dragons are generally depicted as living in rivers or having an underground lair or cave. So what does that look like? The Loch Ness, as what some people say, have a dinosaur living in there. It could also be a dragon, right? Because with the long neck, it could be the serpentine feature that we're looking at. And so that would look a lot like a Diplodocus, right? So they found in Britain, France, Spain, Russia, Poland, Romania, Ukraine, they all have stories about dragons. So in short, dragons came, they were trying to help the earth spirit and the humans evolve. They learned about society, organization in communities. They were the giver of wisdom on how to become more humans and less bestiality. And they were helping spiritual people gain the knowledge of what's behind the veil. What exists in other dimensions, higher planes of learning. This is where they were giving to some individual the divine power to rule, because they were ruling knowing that all this is an illusion. And what was important was the qualities that they were growing and forming a place built on compassion, love, and wisdom. And so dragons would test these disciples or students. And if you were ready, you were given the crystals. And this life crystal was transmitting information, because crystals also have a consciousness. And so you were able to center yourself and communicate with the crystal and learn from past lives and start connecting with a whole new side of knowledge that wasn't present in the third dimension. At one point, a young man showed up and the dragon found him to still be unprepared to receive these crystals. And so he was refused access to the higher learnings because he was still power hungry and he was very self-centered and egotistical. And the dragons didn't want to release more information on him until he could fix this part of himself. And so he was power hungry, he was angry, and he started doing the propaganda story that spread through Europe. And if you think you're saying to me, well, you know, how could it have spread so far? You would be amazed. They were traveling troops. They were traders, merchants, and the news eventually spread, got distorted, yeah, but eventually would make it that dragons were hoarding these mass amount of treasures inside of caves. And that is what started the hunt on dragons. And remember when I said one person cannot kill a dragon? There's the part where a dragon may defend themselves or try to scare you away, but a dragon would not kill another being, that it was human or otherwise. And so that's why they eventually did start being killed. And it's hard to go around saying you killed a wise creature that helped humanity grow and who was kind and instructed them about the nature of the universe and the power to create and empowered you to be a better person. And it was much easier to create a story to kill an evil being that would eat your children and you would have to sacrifice your entire village to them to survive, who were responsible for droughts and the floods and all those things, right? So the uglier the story got, the easier it was to try and go demonize this creature and try and kill it. And in it's where in history, and this is where in China, this didn't happen. But in the Western world, then every depiction of dragons are malevolent. They are terrible beings, and they're often represented now as the devil. Whereas in Egyptian and ancient times, they were described as being acolytes to the gods. But now they're the devils, right? So this is where the malevolence of the dragon comes from. And if you're trying to hunt me down and you're trying to kill me, I may roar at you and I may throw fire at you, right? This is not unexpected behavior. And so the dragons were intricate. It's an intricate mix with the evolution of herd, so they can't just take off. And so they decided to shift dimension, and they left the third dimension and shifted to another dimension. They continued to be the guardian of evolved knowledge of the universe and higher wisdom, and were working hand in hand with the mystery school's leader. And the real treasure that dragons were holding was knowledge and wisdom, and not gold. The crystals were given, but they weren't hoarding them. They would literally match the right crystal to the right person. And so the seven heads of the dragon, the seven things you have to overcome are pride, greed, wrath, envy, lust, gluttony, and sloth. And you're going to say, well, those are the seven sins. I'm like, yes, they are. They are the seven temptations that we are, our trials as humans are to overcome. And then remember that we are divine beings. And as such, we need to master the virtues of prudence, justice, temperance, fortitude, faith, hope, and charity. And that's what you were tested on. At the first level, you were tested on, have you gotten, do you understand what the seven temptations are? Have you overcome the temptations of your physical body? And then you were to develop the ability of the virtues and be a representative and a living virtue yourself. So the pride is described as a personal quality of extreme or excessive pride, right? So we're not talking just, I'm proud of myself, I, you know, studied hard and passed my exam. We're talking extreme or excessive, right? Or dangerous overconfidence. So it's a combination of the arrogance, and you need to be humble. And so it was easy for the dragon to see, are you humble or are you arrogant, right? Greed or avarice is the insatiable desire for material gain, be it food, money, land, animate or inanimate objects or possessions, and or social value, right? Status, power, that's all greed. You had to overcome that. So our little guy did not overcome greed. Then wrath, when he got angry and stormed out of the cave without his crystal, it was wrath. He was the embodiment almost of the all of the things he was supposed to overcome. The anger, known as wrath or rage, is an intense emotional state, right? Intense. Involving a strong, uncomfortable, non-cooperative response to any perceived provocation, hurt, or threat. Envy is an emotion which occurs when a person lacks another quality or skill or achievement or possession. And you desire it, or you wish that the other lacked it, which is interesting, right? You don't have it, so instead of working towards whatever this other person you see has, You wish they didn't have it instead. Instead of being happy that they are good at painting or drawing or, they're good with languages, whatever it is. Instead of being happy for them, you're hoping that they will lose that or something will happen to them and they can't be that anymore. And I thought it was an interesting thing about envy. I thought envy was always about wanting what someone else had, but it's more than that. It could be that you wish that they would lack it. Aristotle defined envy as pain at the sight of another's good fortune, stirred by those who have what we ought to have. And this is the key here. I don't quote Aristotle very often, but I thought this was very good. Is you think you deserve what they've got, but you're not willing to put the work or effort into it, right? So now, lust. What is lust? Lust is a psychological force producing intense desire for something. And I always pictured lust, and this is why I'm going over them today, because I always pictured lust equaling sex, but no, you can lust for something or circumstances with this unhealthy desires. So it could be sexuality, but it could be money, it could be power, right? It's this intense desire. You can't resist this temptation. And then there's gluttony. And gluttony means the overindulgence or overconsumption of food and drink. So not just food, but also drink. So in that, we will put all of the excessive behaviors that people developed. And then we have sloth. And sloth is the most difficult sin to define because it's the idea of laziness, but it's got to do with your mental, spiritual laziness, not just your physical laziness. And we're not just talking about you being tired after a hard day's work. We're just talking about you refusing to, when you're healthy and strong individual, to contribute to your life, your family, your community, and you're just refusing to do any spiritual work, right? I've seen a lot of people take classes from me and then they don't transform that knowledge into action. That is a form of sloth. So now, the way to describe it is your views concerning the virtue of work to support society and further God's plan suggest that through inactivity, your soul is unable to fulfill its divine purpose. Sometimes I write nice lines. I have to read them out. So, in order to make sure that you wouldn't give more power to someone who's power hungry, or give the power of destruction to someone, that the doorkeeper, the wisdom keeper, were the dragons. And they were there to give them information after the fact, after they passed their test. I'm just gonna grab the charger because it seems it's drinking a lot of juice. Give me a second. Now, in the virtues, yeah, by the way, I'm live in Whistler. It's a little bit different than usual. So the virtues were the remedy to the temptation of the material world, right? So the prudence, and I think that the words describing the virtues are a little bit harder to understand than the seven sins. So that's why, again, I'm going to take the time to explain them today. Prudence is the ability to govern and discipline oneself by the use of reason. So you are able to see a situation and you're like, no, maybe I should do that. That looks dangerous. Or that looks, I'm gonna, And that's prudence. And then justice. Justice is the moderation or the mean between selfishness and selflessness. It's the in-between of having more and having less than one's fair share. So, meaning that it's a lot about regulating a relationship with others, but also knowing, like, I have a lot of this, I can share, and oh, I don't have enough, and someone will share. So this is a completely different view of justice than I had. Then there's temperance. Now, temperance is the moderation of the voluntary self-restraint. So there was the Temperance League in Ontario that was very popular. And they were promoting no drinking, right? But temperance actually means moderation, meaning that it's not the complete rejection of something. It's just saying chocolate cake is fine. I can't eat the whole cake, or I don't have to eat cake every day. But if I just have one slice of chocolate cake, it's fine, right? It's that idea. You know, some people will have three closets full of clothes and some people will have barely anything to wear. Temperance is applied in all of those different areas. I hope I'm clear. No one's asking questions, so I seem to be doing okay. For fortitude is the choice and willingness to, this is a good one. Fortitude is the choice and willingness to confront agony, pain, danger, uncertainty, or intimidation. It's the valor of the courage or the bravery. So physical courage in the face of physical pain, hardship, or even death or threat of death, and moral courage. And I think that's the one that is very much lacking. Having, you know, being able to see in a situation and everybody looking down and walking away rather than saying, hey, well, hold on, you know, you can't do this. This is wrong, right? I will do that you're mistreating your dog or you're mistreating your child or you're mistreating your grandmother. I don't care. If I see something that is aberrant and inherently wrong, I don't care what they did. You can't hit them. I don't care what they did. This is not the way to handle the situation. And I will step in. But that would be moral courage. The ability to act rightly in the face of popular opposition, shame, scandal, discouragement, or personal loss. That's not easy to do. And so therefore, that's why they had to work hard at it to be this. Not just having the knowledge of what those things are, but to be those things. There's a big difference between knowing and acting, yes? Faith, often discussed in the terms of believing in God's promises or trusting in his faithfulness. Faith is the belief of things unseen. So you don't need to see it to believe it. And so faith was very important because we're talking about different dimensions. We're talking about higher power. We're talking about your soul. You can't see your soul, but you have to believe it exists. So a lot of the work, the spiritual work, is done on faith. And this is why faith is very important. Then there's hope. Because without hope, there's no life. And it's with hope that you can work on temperance and fortitude and prudence. Hope is an important key in this mix. And so hope is the combination of desire for something and the expectation of receiving it. Meaning, if I'm a good person and I behave well, then this is what's going to happen. If I study hard, I write my exam, I'll get a good grade. It's as simple as that, or it's more complicated in the sense of, if I am pure spirit, and if I follow these virtues, I will be able to raise into the light. Yes? And then charity. Charity is not only the love of God, but also the love to our neighbor. So I would interchange personally. The virtue is charity. So I'm taking a very Catholic concept. But the idea is that for me, it's be easily transform into brotherly love. So there was the White Brotherhood, there were the Druids, there were many organizations around the world where you call yourselves sisters and brothers because it's trying to solidify the links between humans as brotherly love, right? There's a difference, meaning that there's no sex involved. But you can learn to love your neighbor. And in James Redfield's book, he speaks about when you look at someone, you look at them and you try to see their inner beauty. And as you're doing this exercise, in order to see their beauty, you're shining light on them. And this light will reflect their inner beauty to you. And this is what love is learning to appreciate the person in front of you for exactly who they are, what they are, and accepting every bit of everything they are. And so that's charity in a different word. Now, this is still the knowledge being transmitted through the different mystery schools all around the world. So this test, this learning and this growth survived in the third dimension. Hello, Frank. Survived in the third dimension. It was funneled through the mystery schools. So now you're starting to see why am I talking about dragons? Because the knowledge from that dates back from the dragons was funneled through the mystery schools. And the teachings were available to the few who demonstrated certain qualities that made them possible disciples. The dragons were credited with bringing civilization to the world. They were often guides of leaders, kings, and emperors, right? As we saw in Egypt, in China. They helped create physical body for the fifth incarnation on Earth. Now, many Aboriginal stories or First Nation stories all over the world say that the Earth, meaning more not the planet never always survives, but the civilization living on Earth has been previously destroyed. Now, depending on which tribe you're talking about, it could be the fourth or the fifth time that the world has been rebuilt, right? The Hopi developed the cycle of time, and they believe that this is our fourth world. The first world was destroyed by fire, comet or asteroid strike, and or a number of volcanic eruptions, right? And the second world was destroyed by ice, the Great Ice Age, and as many cultures recorded around the globe, there was a tremendous deluge of flooding that destroyed the third world or the fourth, right? Depending on what you're basing yourself on. If you go to the Royal Tyrol Museum in Drumheller, they will tell you there's been five distinct extinction periods. So the native First Nation teachings are not very far from the truth that the scientific community has finally confirmed what they've been transmitting orally through the ages, right? The dragons also invented books, calendars, and how to grow corn, depending on where you are in the world. In China, now you have to ask yourself, why do all of a sudden we switch from oral tradition to written tradition? Something inspired them, someone guided them, someone showed them the way. This is attributed to the dragons. And growing corn would be Quetzalcoatl in South America. And calendars could be in Egypt, because Egyptian had a magnificent calendar that no one talks about, and also in South America. And I didn't double check if that applied for China as well. Now, the different world explained in the tradition say that the people first lived inside the earth, and then eventually, as the destruction happened and the world changed, they came to the surface. And the Navajo say that this is the fifth world. And the world is changing. We see it. The world is cracking. The world is having possible storms, destructions, earthquakes, volcano erupting. There's things happening. The earth is stretching and going, okay, I'm ready for the next shift. This is the big shift that we talked about, right? And she's going to shift into a different dimension. We're going to have to follow with her. This is why this is important. This is why I'm taking the time to teach you guys. You can prepare yourself spiritually, energetically for this ascension, for this moving forward. Different world. but same planet. That's the best way I can explain it. Now, the dragons have a duty to fulfill, just like any other creatures, that it is fairy, gnomes, elves, they have roles as they enter into this contract with Earth and humanity. And the withdrawal of the dragons from their presence on Earth caused a shift, because they weren't able to transmit their wisdom or their knowledge, right? And so they contacted the Earth Karmic Board and agreed that the dragons would be able to enter humanity through a human body. And therefore, if they could overcome the seven temptations and blockages, they would be awakened and they could start sharing their wisdom and their knowledge. So dragons, fiercely independent creatures, are very aware and accepting that there's a hierarchy system under which they operate. So they can just do whatever they want, but they got the permission from the karmic board, and some, not all, dragons decided to enter the human evolution and became human dragon hybrids. And this began a long journey of reincarnation, the karmic wheel, and every lifetime having to reawaken to their own roots, who they are, and being able to again spread knowledge and wisdom. I don't know if you guys see this coming, but hopefully some of you are going, ooh, what's coming next? Dragons have the ability to master all the rays of light, and their purpose is strictly spiritual, and to become all they're teachers, but also wisdom keepers, elders, and they have mastered will and wisdom very well. But when it comes to the human body, they have to learn to love. That's one of their things that they had to, by entering the human evolution, they're evolving themselves, right? They're now earned the ability to grow on a different scale. So they have the gift to speak with the fire of truth and show humanity's path to wisdom. Now, the fire of truth, that was a very interesting analogy to the fire-breathing dragon. Maybe the fire-breathing dragon just means that they speak the truth in a blunt, clear, on-canvas way. Just, this is it. Take it or leave it. Yes? And so, a dragon hybrid. Now, I'm a dragon hybrid. Dragon hybrid tend to be, to live very long. And this is not me saying this. I'll give you the quote from the book at the end. But they tend to be very intelligent. And they're very good at using their energy to create, heal, or divine spiritual purposes. They tend by their nature to be drawn to the metaphysics, because it's part of your makeup energetically. So you'll be drawn to that, because you're born in a physical body. You have to learn to walk, learn to eat, learn to talk, learn to read, learn to count. But eventually, the minute you have some freedom of research and curiosity, they'll be drawn to the metaphysics to open that door to have access to this dragon wisdom to download into them. They're very, very loyal, and they are protectors, and they have a great need for freedom. They need to be able to be free to share their time with who they want, their energy with who they want, their money with who they want, and be themselves in the world. So, hence my favorite saying, you either love me or you hate me. If you love me, you're welcome to stay. If you don't, you can leave, right? But this is me. So I love me for who I am, right? So the dragons through the connections of human hybrids are also being connected on the etheric field. Now, more people are turning towards meditations, they're turning towards linking with the planet, spending more time with the earth. And this is where you'll find etheric dragon, meaning they don't no longer have a physical body that you can touch, but you can visualize them. And as you see them, it's not your imagination. Dragons don't come to you out of imagination. If you see a dragon during meditation, it's a real dragon coming to you because he thinks you're ready to grow in wisdom and spiritual powers. Children have are easily connect with dragons, but more and more adults are developing their abilities and are in the search of connecting with their soul and fulfilling their soul's purpose, and the dragon shows up when it's time for them to receive additional help. So therefore, dragons are real, and they are real even to this day. They're either in the etheric form and or in the hybrid human, but the etheric form is just a different form. It doesn't make them less real. They are real. So if you see them in your meditation or your dreams, try talking to them, try asking for their name. You know, remember their color, remember their stance, and have a conversation. There's no need to be afraid of a dragon showing up in one of your meditations or your dreams or during vision quests. They are there to assist you and help you grow. That's the reason why they show up. So now someone's asking, so what is it like to be a dragon hybrid? Well, I'm the link between etheric dragons and the peeps that need to be connected. So I'm helping this connection happen. And I became aware that I had a dragon beside me when I was a teen. When I got a car, I remember, that's a funny story. I remember driving down the highway and there's a dragon. And I say my dragon because he was with me all the time. My dragon was like a dog in the wind, you know, riding the top of the car. And I remember saying to him, get in the car. If someone sees you, you're going to cause an accident. And he turned to me and said, you're the only one who can see me. And I'm like, right. But still, get in the car, you're getting me nervous. So this dragon would go with me absolutely everywhere. And he called me Seedling. And I figured that's his nickname for me, right? My name is Sonia. He's calling me Seedling. That's okay, right? That's cool. And we became partners, right? Because I would talk and then he would listen and he would reply and I'd be like, yeah, you're right. Okay, this might be a better way of doing things, or I should read that book. Or eventually I became training as a shamanic practitioner and I went to Peru. While I was in Peru, I completed my training there, and one of the ceremonies was the ayahuasca ceremonies. And what's magnificent about ayahuasca is that it's not a drug. It's an expander of your mind. It literally feels like you're cracking an egg, and then your mind's able to finally expand to the space that surrounds it. And I was in this space that was kind of enclosed, and then there's me and there's the dragon, and then there's a guardian that comes, and she's like, the dragon is a part of you and not a separate being from you. You are half human and half dragon, but right now the two of you are walking through life as separate being. And I'm like, okay, so then what do we do? And they're like, well, we're gonna put the dragon back and mix the DNA so you become one. You become a true hybrid. And I was like, okay, don't know what that looks like, but let's do this. And it's a very transformative experience because etherically, not physically, physically I still look the same, but etherically I saw my body change. My energetic body shifted. And the way I feel, I'm much more heavier, I'm much more grounded, I'm much taller, and I'm much stronger. But just like the dragons tested the humans, and they had to overcome their wrath, their pride, their lust, I, without knowing, was being tested. So I felt the strength and the power of this dragon that is now me. And then they transposed my ex-husband there in the room. And now I have the power to shred him, to burn him to a crisp, to chew him, tear him to pieces. Anyway, I'm imagining all these things that I could do to this person. And I'm pacing around him on all fours. I'm walking like, I would say like more like a cougar. Hence why dragons are defined more like felines attributes. And then all of a sudden, after I imagine all these different ways to eliminate this person, I'm like, you know what? I've given you too much power already. I've given you too much of my time and my energy. And I will simply let you be and stop giving you my power. I'm done. I'm walking away. And knowing that I have the power to just simply destroy him, I decided, no, you know what? It's not worth it. I'm no more wasting energy. I'm just going to let all this anger in this room, and I'm just going to walk away from it. And that was my test of wrath. Because even if it was just a image of him, and I wouldn't have actually physically hurt the person itself, I resisted the temptation to even destroy just the image. I chose wisely to no longer lose my power to things that made me angry in the past. And I passed the test, which was magnificent. And this little lady came and she said, you chose the right choice. So you get to keep the power. So the power could have actually been taken away from me. And I was like, whoa, but I like the dragon. I like me being dragon. I'm glad I get to keep the dragon. And so the top of this building, which was a rounded building, opened up. And I was able to fly as this human dragon hybrid into the stars. It was magnificent. And then, I don't know, it awakened the connections to the universe that I'd been missing for so long. Things became very clear. It was a fantastic experience. And that's when I decided to write about it. So if you want to know more about all this, the story is written in my biography. So it's called I Dragon, the biography of a spiritual transformation. So it's not like on Tuesday I did this and on Thursday I did that. It's really emotionally, where was I? What are the things that happened? What emotions and mental attitude did I develop? How did I overcome this? Eventually culminating in the complete transmutation of my body into a hybrid dragon human body. So I think it's an interesting read for anyone out there who's losing hope, who's being discouraged, who thinks they'll never be able to find a way. There is a way. In the book, I reference you to all the different teachers that I work with and all the different books that I read, and how did that transform me and how did that help me. So there's that. For those of you who are specifically more interested in finding out, am I a hybrid? And you could be a hybrid bee, dragon, orca, fairy, elf. I mean, there's many, many, many types of beings that were unable to continue living in a third dimension, that shifted to a higher dimension. And in order to be able to conclude their contract with human race, came back as hybrid. So if you're interested, the good book about that is Hybrids, You Think You're Human by Tanis Halliwell. It's a good book. And she also wrote Decoding Your Destiny. And I think that if you're really curious and you really want to know more about this, Decoding Your Destiny is fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating. So it's a good book. So that's it for me today. Unless you do have any questions, I'm seeing a lot of highs and people are watching, and that's great, but you've been pretty silent. So if there's no further questions, then that'll be it for this week. Next week, we're talking about what is Reiki. Now, Some of the podcasts sometimes, like this series, I'm talking about chakras, I'm talking about Reiki, and I'm thinking, ah, why would I do a podcast on this? Everybody knows this. And then I got a little light bulb come in the moment of people saying, what are the chakras? And I don't know anything about Reiki. How do I explain Reiki to someone? And I'm like, oh, okay, so there's a need for that. So next week, I will be talking about Reiki, the different levels of Reiki, how you learn, how you practice it. Try to debug a lot of the things that people are curious or not quite understanding, and hopefully give you clarity on this modality that is all over the world now. Okay, so with this, I send you all my love, and I'll see you next week. Yes, and you all take care, and I'll see you then. Bye-bye.